Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
I encourage my students to do group travel. You know, when I went back and learned hospitality, I learned that the hotels make the most money when groups come in. So when people are coming in for conventions, for weddings, for all sorts of group travel, means 10 or more. Our students, those who are brave, get a property so can sleep 10 or more people. But that means you got to pay a higher rent. I'll give you an example. One of my students has a 5-bedroom in Hollywood, Florida. Mm-hmm. Her rent is a whooping $5,500, mm-hmm. but she brings in $15,000 a year. It's kind of scary. If it's your first property and you're like, $5,500, oh my God, that's a lot. But it was her first property, and last year she made $160,000. Mm. So we tried to focus on the group travel niche because that's the most lucrative niche in travel.
Hey, business owners, what if I helped you get access to $50,000 in business funding for $1 a day? Would you be interested? Well, inside of my Credit Mastery community, you're going to be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program that's worth tens of thousands of dollars to give you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also going to be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that'll help you reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're going to be giving you 2 coaching calls every week that'll give you the exact banks you need to go to get access to $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat get access to $50,000 in funding from Chase, helped Alvin get access to $8,000 in funding from Amex, helped Matt boost his personal credit score by 150 points, and helped Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below this video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today, is a very special day because our guest today is an entrepreneur, investor, mentor, coach, business credit specialist, and short-term rental expert extraordinaire. She's the creator of the 100K Formula, a training designed to help business owners clean their credit, secure business funding, and launch their first Airbnb business with ease. She's also the owner of the Booked and Busy Bootcamp, a program created to help aspiring real estate investors get started in the short-term rental space to find, furnish, and fill their first location all within a matter of days. From humble beginnings in business to building a 7-figure empire that's something to witness, our guest blends hospitality, funding strategy, and mentorship into a brand that's changed lives nationwide. And today, she's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from New York City, I'm here with the one, the only, Miss Martine Lacroix. What's going on, family? How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I am absolutely fantastic, but if I was any better, I'd probably be you. Happy to have you on. How has everything been? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
100%. I've had the pleasure of getting a chance to know you, of course, leading up to this episode. I'm excited for the audience to, of course, get a chance to know you as well. This is going to be a very fruitful conversation, and I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, I did a solid job introducing you, but nobody knows Martine like the woman herself. So for those who are unfamiliar, let's get them familiar. Who exactly is Miss Martine Lacroix?
Martine is a lady from Brooklyn, born and bred. I am first generation, and I was raised in Brooklyn by my Haitian parents, and my goal was to become an attorney. Mm. But when I finished college, I couldn't pass the LSAT. Okay. So I started a part-time business helping people fix their credit. Mm-hmm. I did that for a few years as I was working full-time as a paralegal.
Okay.
And then one day, Marvin, I got that phone call. We don't need you anymore. You're fired. So I took because I was always in the entrepreneurship world, I always put that energy out, even though I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. I took my last $20,000 and I said, okay, this is it. And I invested it in short-term rentals. At the time, nobody had heard of Airbnb. Mm-hmm. So a few weeks before I got fired, I was speaking to an attorney and I told her, I'm thinking of renting out my place because I live not far from Times Square to tourists. And she was like, where would you live? I said, oh, crash my sister in Philly. And then she was like, she thought it was a little weird. But when she came back a few days later, she said, Martine, I went to Iceland. I booked a trip in Iceland on a website called Airbnb.com. Mm-hmm. So I'm dating myself because there were no apps back then. Mm-hmm. And so when she told me that, I went home that evening. I listed my own home on Airbnb.com. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to when I got fired, I had gotten a few bookings with my own home. So I said, I'm going to try something. I'm so tired. Obviously, I'm not going to go to law school. I cannot pass the LSAT. Mm-hmm. So I took my last 20K. I invested it in this unknown business, and it made seven figures the following year. I made over $250,000. So I never worked a 9-to-5 since 2010. I never got fired again. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I made seven figures in short-term rentals.
Wow, damn. All right, yeah, let's unpack that. There's a lot that happened there. What year is this happening around?
2010.
This is 2010. So let's go all the way back to 2010 and kind of peel the layers back.
Okay.
The plan was for you to go to school to become a lawyer.
Yeah, after going to St. John's, yeah.
After going to St. John's. Now, you said you're first generation Haitian.
Yes.
Got you. So me and you were kind of joking about it off camera about like our roots and things like that.
Yes.
For people who know, whether they are Haitian themselves or come from a Caribbean background, you know, like, you know, you only really have like three career choices. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer. Otherwise,
absolutely,
like your parents ain't
having
it. Yeah, there you go. You are a failure in your parents' eyes. So you go to school.
Mm-hmm.
The plan is to fulfill one of those roles.
Correct.
The LSAT isn't doing what it needs to do.
Can I pass the LSAT?
Can't pass it. You make the decision now to kind of start going in a different direction. What are those conversations like early on with friends and more specifically with family as that's happening?
So I never really told my parents I was struggling with the LSAT. Mm-hmm. I just figured eventually I would pass it.
Okay.
So I finished college, but I was an older student because I had gotten, side story, I had gotten married and had a child at that point. Mm-hmm. So they weren't really hovering like on my back like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still felt like as the firstborn, like they had that expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they thought somewhere along the line, while I'm working for the law firm, I would eventually go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just thought that would happen. So we never really had that full conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I just ventured into business.
Mm. Yeah. So the way you made it sound though, you made it seem so like it's not easy for someone to come from, you know, the structured
mm-hmm.
9-to-5, I'm gonna go to school, get a job, just work till whenever. And then, all right, I'm gonna just take my last 20,000. Let's just start in this business.
Right.
What was the mindset shift or the reality check that maybe you had that gave you that push to take that kind of step? Because it's not an easy step to take.
It's not. And I always tell people I would have never been a full-time business owner if I didn't get fired.
Mm.
So I think what happened was once I started getting bookings on with my own property, so that was the safe route.
Mm.
So I plan on keeping my job and then, you know, renting out my place on the weekends for side money. So I did that for about 3 weeks. And every weekend I would get like $500, $600. So I kind of tested it safely.
Safely.
So when I got fired, I was like, well, it worked with my part-time home. What would happen if I had a home dedicated just for short-term rentals?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I didn't know if it was going to work or not.
Mm.
I could have lost. I like to say I could have ended up under the Brooklyn Bridge because if that 20K... I didn't get bookings, I would be like, no job, lost my 20K, but it worked. I call it accidental business.
Accidental business. I love that. Okay. So it's you get fired from your job when you're already testing the waters with the Airbnb situation.
Right.
It works. You're like, all right, well, I mean, I just have more time to pour into this thing that's already shown me proof of concept.
Right.
Are the conversations with family and friends changing at that point? Or are they still like, this is a temporary thing. You need to get back to trying to get in law school. What's happening there?
My friends thought I was crazy.
Mm.
Like, literally, I had a friend tell me, are you crazy? Like, first of all, when I told him what I was going to do, he was like, how are you going to get away with this? The landlords are going to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And then my family, I didn't even tell them. I just told them I lost my job.
Okay.
I didn't tell them until I started making money.
Okay.
Yeah. And my son, he's 26 now, but at the time, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, he was like 11. We had to crash with my sister because even after I got the two properties, I was still renting my own home on the weekends.
Yeah.
So it was like a lot of sacrificing.
So you're a mom, you're trying to figure this thing out. You're not really getting as much support as you want from the people who are closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, it's not like, it's not working. It is working, maybe just not to the degree that you want it to.
Right.
I have some insight on what's going on with everyone else. What's going on with you internally? Or at that point for you, are you like, no, it's going to work. Like, I'm going to be fine. Or is doubt starting to creep in internally and mentally? What are you dealing with in that season?
So in August 2010, I could not believe when I started to get bookings with those two studios. Mm. I was excited. Mm. But it was like the honeymoon phase. Because all these things started to happen because I didn't know how to run. Short-term rentals is like running a hotel.
Yeah.
So it's like excitement because I'm like, oh my God, I can make money without having to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't know how to run a hotel because my background is law. Mm-hmm. So that's my background. I just went to school. I studied pre-law at St. John's. So that was my path. So it's a lot of mistakes, Marvin. Like so many mistakes. The biggest mistakes was in January 2011.
Okay.
When nobody told me about slow season.
Slow season. Okay, got you.
Short-term rentals.
Yeah.
But there's less travelers coming to New York because it's freezing outside and there's all these storms.
Yep.
Well, guess what happened? I got no bookings.
The money ain't money. And now real business starts. Okay. January comes, you're not getting no bookings. What's happening around that time?
Freaking out. I have to pay these two rents and I have to pay my own rent. I have my own expenses.
So you have three different pretty much overheads that you're accounting for.
With $0.
With $0 coming in. Welcome to entrepreneurship.
Exactly.
Okay. So what's happening there?
So I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And so I couldn't figure out why nobody was booking the place like they were in the summer. Because the summertime is high season in New York.
Right.
So that's the thing in short-term rentals. Nobody tells you about seasonality. Mm-hmm. So January is the slowest season in New York City. And so I started to put two and two together. I was like, I went on the hotels and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to drop my rates. So I didn't know nothing about dynamic pricing. I knew nothing. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I'm going to have a special. I'm going to charge $99 a night, but they have to stay for 10 nights. Because I had two properties. One was $1,400 and one was $1,450. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if they stay for 10 nights in each, at least I'll make the rent and I'll pay a little bit out of my pocket. And so that's what I did. At the time, I was doing something that's called dynamic pricing, but I just was in survival mode.
Yeah.
So I made $99 a night, but you can't stay for one night. You got to stay for at least 10 nights. Mm-hmm. And that's when I learned, oh, there's slow season. Okay, next year I'm gonna fix that. So for 3 months, I had to like, that's when it's dead in New York. Then it picks up in March. So for 3 months, I was in survival mode.
So you come in, it's the honeymoon phase, crushing it. January of 2011. Oh, that's strange. There's no money coming in. It's been a couple of weeks. What's going on here? Right? Things are going in that way.
Right.
You put two and two together, you make the adjustments as necessary, and you kind of start getting back on your foot. Was there a moment as you're navigating this Airbnb journey early on where you come to a point where you're like, I got it. Like, I think I figured it out now.
Yeah, so there was a company called HomeAway. They're now owned by Expedia back then.
Okay.
So I called HomeAway and I started talking to them on the phone. There was not a lot of people doing Airbnb in New York City, probably like 600 hosts worldwide. And so they had a lot of time to talk to me. And so the guy was going through the numbers with me and then he told me they have a convention coming up. So then that's when I realized, oh, I can go to a convention and learn about short-term rentals with peer-minded individuals. So I survived the first 3 months and then money started to come around March and April. And then I attended the HomeAway convention. And then every year after that, I attended a convention every single year to educate myself. And the following year, I went back to school so I could learn hospitality. Because I was like, a lot of people are not doing this right now, but it's a matter of time before entrepreneurial people are going to realize they could do this with their property. And I don't want them to beat me out. I was here first. And so I went back to school. I went to NYU and studied hospitality the following year, 2012. Because I was like, I can't run a business like this. This is crazy. And then that's why I fully educated myself and learned all the things that I teach my students now.
So this is 2012, you said?
This is 2 years after I started and was struggling so hard.
So you're about 13 years. No, I'm lying because you started in 2010.
15 years.
15 years in the game. Lord have mercy. That's a beautiful thing. So, okay. So now for where you are now, you have taken your near two decades of experience and you're in a season or in a space where you're not just still doing it yourself, but you're teaching other people how to do it, which I think is great. A lot of what you teach is not just around the Airbnb side, but also around the steps needed to even be in position to get to the Airbnb and make sure when you get it, you can sustain it. And a lot of that, from what I understand, is around credit, which is my field. So I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about that. If I'm watching this and I'm like, all right, I'm kind of interested in this Airbnb thing. You know, I've heard about it from afar, but I'm not really in the position financially right now to get started, right? Whether it's because, let's say for example, my credit just isn't where it needs to be. And I come to you and I'm saying like, all right, cool, Martin, what's the first step that I need to take to get the credit side of things taken care of? So I'm now have the foundation to go and get my first Airbnb. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I tell people to not do what I did. Do not take your last 20K or even your savings to like wait and fix their credit. So it's a good thing you're asking that, because I was coaching only Airbnb, and I started to notice a lot of my students don't have the credit to get approved for the properties. Mm-hmm. So that this year I implemented, you know, helping them. That's the first step we do now. We help them fix their credit. Mm-hmm. We get them, you know, their profiles straightened out. Mm-hmm. I explain to them how their profile should look, that mm-hmm. they should have X amount of primaries. Mm-hmm. They should have not just the score, but also how their profile should be set up. And then I explain to them the best credit cards once they fix their credit to get business credit. Mm-hmm. So I implemented the credit this year because it's such a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And so because my background was law, I was doing credit repair before I started Airbnb, you know, part-time.
Okay.
So I was doing that. That's how I got into entrepreneurship. And so I took my knowledge. I didn't realize how important this was, and I added the credit repair portion to my program. And so now all my students for my masterclass, we pretty much 100% focus on credit. Mm-hmm. We get them their credit score right. We get their credit profile right. Mm-hmm. And then I tell them about once they get their credit score right, it's easy to get funding. Mm-hmm. I tell them about, you know, the big three, Amex, Chase, mm-hmm. The big threes. And then after that, it's smooth sailing.
So if we're unpacking that a bit more, if starting from kind of ground zero, if I'm coming to you, what does the structure of my personal credit need to look like before I can even start thinking about going for the Airbnb?
Yeah. So landlords will, because we use the arbitrage, meaning we don't own the properties, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So a lot of these properties on short-term rentals, they tend to be nice. And some of them are in buildings, or even if they're private homes, mm-hmm. they're higher end. And so if you have like a 630, the landlord's not going to approve you.
Right.
So that's the first thing I tell my students. They need to get their credit to at least a 700.
Okay.
Just to get the property alone. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of them don't have the funds. Mm-hmm. So 720. So I tell them to try to get it between 720 to 740. Mm-hmm. And so we pull their credit. Mm-hmm. We guide them through what their score should look like mm-hmm. for the property and also for the banks. Mm. So 720 to 740 is what we aim to do.
One of the other things I think I've heard you talk about as well, which is, I know AI is very hot right now, mm-hmm. but like as I'm sure you've seen from students that you sit down with, a lot of times you'll have people that it's not that they have no credit, they have it, but life happened, right? Credit got messed up, whether it was through a situation they were going through or whatever it may be. If I wanted to, one of the things I've heard you talk about on different platforms is how someone can use artificial intelligence to go ahead and actually restore their credit report mm-hmm. to where they're now in position to now go out and leverage their personal credit. What does that process now look like? Because not many people are talking about that.
Right. So last year I started to see this thing called sweeps online, right?
Okay.
And I started to say, what in the hell is a sweep? Mm-hmm. So I started to do my research, and I realized that it's a quicker method of mm-hmm. credit repair, right? Mm-hmm. Using Fair Credit Reporting Act 605B. Mm-hmm. And so I started to research further, and I started to do tests with a few clients mm-hmm. and also family members. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to implement this by using ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But at first, the sweep, what we do is we just do we use like a loophole, mm-hmm. like you said. A lot of these people between us, obviously they did these things, right? They got bad credit. Irresponsibility, divorce,
right.
health, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we used the data breach method, mm-hmm. which is if you find your information, your personal info on the, you know, data breach websites, mm-hmm. you can say that you have been a victim of breach. Mm-hmm. And then we filed an identity theft report. Mm-hmm. It's a loophole. It doesn't mean that, you know, those things are not theirs, but it allows them to clean their credit in 4 days.
Interesting.
And then so then we used ChatGPT. I used that for a client. So we clean her credit using the breach method. And then one thing was left. It was like a collection agency. Mm. And the collection agency sent her a letter and proved that it was her debt. Mm. But I noticed from my credit repair history, you know, in the past, that, you know, trade lines have to stay in dispute. Mm-hmm. So it didn't say that when mm-hmm. we did the first set of dispute. So mm-hmm. we went on ChatGPT. We said, hey, this collection agency owes us $1,000. It's a violation for Fair Credit Reporting Act. Hey, chat, can you write this letter so we can threaten them? Mm-hmm. And ChatGPT wrote a 3-page letter for us. Mm-hmm. We sent it to the collection agency, and it came off the following day. Mm-hmm. So now in like 26 day, we cleaned this client's credit. So for the past year, we've been using the data breach method and ChatGPT to clean people's credit. And it's been amazing.
So I'm leveraging ChatGPT now. I'm mm-hmm. leveraging the data breach approach. I now have my personal credit where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Now, like you said, in your journey, you pretty much took 20K out your own pocket and said, I'm going to go ahead and secure my first property, mm-hmm. right? In this day and age that we're living in now, more individuals are becoming more privy to working with banks pretty much to get this funding. If I now wanted to be able to go out and get capital from some of these different banks that are on there, what does the process now look like in order for me to get whether funding through business credit so that I can go ahead and secure my first Airbnb?
Yeah. So once their credit is ready to go, all the negatives are done. We try to get them, you know, the traditional 0%. Mm-hmm. We go through either, it depends. If they want to do it themselves, we tell them to just go on Amex. Mm-hmm. Credit unions are amazing also, like DCU. Mm-hmm. I myself personally have been able to get, you know, credit through DCU. Mm-hmm. So we tell them to go to those credit unions, NASA. We tell them to do credit unions first and then apply for business credit cards once they form their LLC, mm-hmm. like on the business side, like mm-hmm. Amex and, you know, Chase. Mm-hmm. But first we hit the credit unions and try to get as much as we can mm-hmm. so that it could report on their personal side so that when they get comparable credit, mm-hmm. they can get on the business side a higher amount. But we love the business credit because it doesn't report to their personal side and they can max out, you know, furniture and so forth without it bringing down their, you know, UTI. But we always go for the credit unions first and then we do the business credit after.
So we get our personal credit right. Mm-hmm. We get our business credit where we need it to be. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say that we have the funds that we need to be able to go and start on the Airbnb side of things. For starters, because you've been doing this for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Airbnb has been around, I don't know how long this business model.
2007 they started.
Okay, so it's been around a little bit. We're approaching around like the 20-ish mark, mm-hmm. right, in 2025 for this. Why is starting a short-term rental arbitrage business the best business for people to start in 2025?
It's out of all the different types of real estate, like fix and flips, mm-hmm. Section 8, people like to do Section 8, distressed property wholesaling.
Right.
It's the one that cash flows the quickest. Mm. And the best part of it is what we do call OPP, other people's property.
Okay.
And so the hotels like Marriott Hotel, Hilton, all these hotel brands, they do not own their properties. Mm. They lease them all out. So we use the same model. We lease properties out for like 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And then we, in essence, we run hotels through short-term rental space. Mm. So it's very fast, very little, not a lot of investment. I would say 15K if you're being fancy, but with 7-8K, you can get a property furnished mm-hmm. and ready to go. And
with less than $10,000?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're in markets like New York City, mm-hmm. like markets like the Midwest, mm-hmm. you can get a 2-bedroom for like, I don't know, $2,000, 21, fancy, luxury, mm-hmm. and then you furnish it. If it's a 2-bedroom, it shouldn't be more than $5,000. Mm-hmm. And you're ready to go. And the Midwest is one of the best kept secrets right now, 2025. So
let's bring it down to ground zero. If I'm a beginner, not even a beginner, I'm aspiring to get in this space. Mm-hmm. The first part of this, I'm assuming, is securing the location that we want, or finding and securing the location. Right. How do I find the first building, the first property, the first space that I want to be able to put or use to start my Airbnb business?
So we have property locators in our program, but let's say someone doesn't want to do our program. Mm-hmm. I always give like free game. Mm-hmm. There are Facebook groups that mm-hmm. have landlords that allow you to do this mm-hmm. because a lot of landlords, if you take out on your property for 2-3 years, now they have their rent paid, mm-hmm. especially landlords who are familiar, have done business before with hosts, who are good hosts. Mm-hmm. They love Airbnb because now they know their rent is going to get paid and you're going to maintain the property. You can also go on Zillow and do cold call, but I'm not a fan of that.
Right.
I think if you go on the Facebook groups, if you mm-hmm. like, if you don't go do the property locator that we have, you go on the Facebook groups and just search landlords who allow arbitrage. Mm-hmm. There's like at least 4 big groups mm-hmm. that you can find all sorts of landlords who will allow you to do this with their property.
What are the, because, and you kind of talked about it. I remember you joked about how when you first started doing it from your location in Hell's Kitchen, mm-hmm. I think you said you had like a friend or a family member that was just like, yo, you're a landlord. If they find out about this, you're done.
Yes.
You're going under.
Yes.
Not all landlords, from what I understand, I'm not in the space, but speaking for someone who's from the outside looking in, are open to this business model still in 2025. Mm-hmm. So what are those conversations like with these landlords? Are we just messaging them like, hey, I got an Airbnb, can I go ahead and use the space? Or is there a little bit more of a back and forth that's happening here when we're meeting with these people?
So I tell people to try to stay away from the word Airbnb because landlords, whenever they hear Airbnb, but a lot of landlords, first of all, they don't even know what Airbnb is. They don't understand how it works. But when they do hear it, it's always some type of controversy. Mm-hmm. So it's like has a bad connotation. So we like to say we are a corporate lease. We're looking for a corporate lease for our corporate clients, but we use the word short-term rentals. And if the landlord asks you if you're going to do Airbnb, like we tell our clients, don't lie. Like just tell them, yes, we're going to do that. But we try to polish it up and say we are a vacation rental company or we are a corporate rental company for our clients, we're looking to lease or your place, do you allow corporate leases? And some of them will say, is it for Airbnb? And we'll say yes. And they'll say, no, we're not interested in that. And some of them will say, some of them will say no. So you kind of like have to be a salesperson if you're doing it cold. But if you go on the Facebook groups, obviously those landlords are already familiar with that. But if you're calling, cold calling landlords on Zillow, if you call 25 landlords, I would say 22 will say no to you. But you'll find three that says yes.
Are we looking for, so now this is another key point too, because are we trying to find, let's say I live in New York, we're in New York right now.
Okay.
You mentioned the Midwest. If I'm starting out, am I looking for landlords in my backyard or am I now venturing to different cities to say like, all right, let me look at, see if I can find landlords in Chicago, find landlords in Indiana or Texas or wherever it may be. Or does it, is it more or less the same process either way?
That's a great question. So if you're in your city, if your city doesn't have regulations, I tell people to stay in their backyard because you know your backyard better than any other place, right? You know where the best restaurants are, best coffee shops. You can help your visitor the most. But in New York, there's a regulation here. So I tell people, might as well go to the Midwest or go to Philly. But even Philly is starting to have regulations too. So, and the rents are getting expensive there. So I just tell anybody who's on the East Coast to just head over to the Midwest. But if you don't have regulations, you should, like in the Florida, I noticed the blue, the red states do not have a lot of regulations. So if you live in Florida, you definitely want to stay there. If you're in, even though the rents are higher in Miami, Miami, Hollywood, Orlando is the number one destination. So it depends. In New York City, definitely have to go to the Midwest. Anywhere else, find out there's regulations. If there are, you have to find another market. If there are not, you stay right where you're at because that's the best place to start.
Hey, business owners, imagine being able to walk in and out of banks and starting to see approvals instead of rejections. And it's not because you changed anything with your business, but because you put your personal credit report in the position it needed to be in. Here at Takeoff Financial, our team helps business owners just like you using consumer law strategies that'll get real results in real time. We remove collections, charge-offs, late payments, evictions, delinquent student loans, along with anything else that's keeping you from getting to your funding goals. And best of all, it's completely done for you. We send the disputes, file the complaints, and do everything needed to help put you in position to access your first $50,000 to $100,000 in business credit. So if you're interested, head over to takeofffinancial.com or click the link in the description below to book a free consultation with me and my team to learn more about how we can help you get one step closer to your funding goals. So kind of, because like I said, you've been doing this for like 15 years now. At some point, does it make sense for us to now start looking into owning where we're doing our business at, or is this a business model where we always want to make sure that like, nope, we're subleasing from somebody else who owns a property? Because for me, it's like, okay, let's say I live in New York. If I own a property or one of these other blue states or big markets, New York, California, wherever, if I own a property, who gonna tell me what? My mortgage getting paid, right? Like I could sublease, I can do whatever it is that I want with this property. But obviously, once again, when you're dealing with a landlord, you have to abide by that landlord's rules. From your experience, does it ever get to a point where it makes sense for us to say like, all right, we should probably secure one of these properties ourselves? Or will it always be a matter of, nope, we'll rent from someone else?
Yeah. So nowadays, what everybody's doing is like underhanded types of stuff. They do some underhanded things to their hosts because their hosts are not like privy to how they run their business. So in 2025, Airbnb slowly is getting rid of that that arbitrage model. Right. So what they're doing is because the hosts are so uneducated, they have to find ways to make money. So let's say you go to a building. Let's say you're in, let's say for argument's sake, this is allowed in New York, and you get like 10 apartments in New York, right? And you're making a killing. Well, Airbnb, what they're doing now is they want to go straight to your landlord and partner with them. So, but they have to get rid of you. So they tell you you violated. They've been doing this all year. Or you long. They tell you you violated something. So they're slowly getting rid of people who have all these multiple units. So now we're focusing on just getting one property that's a privately owned property with a landlord, trying to cash flow with it and eventually purchasing your own. Because the arbitrage method in the buildings are slowly going away. They're getting rid of that so they could partner directly with the landlords to make more money and get rid of the old hosts.
So I'm not even in the space. So it sounds like my inclination of like, you know, it doesn't sound like it's happening snap a finger like that, but long term, it would behoove you to, if you do have ownership of the property.
Absolutely.
In terms of, okay,
yeah,
got you. So we now find these properties, whether we own them ourselves or we're subleasing, right? Now, you and I have called it Airbnb and kind of gone back and forth between terms. I'm Airbnb, short-term rental arbitrage, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of joked about this off camera, but it's like, you know, Airbnb, most people are familiar with the term Airbnb, but that's just a company, that's an app, right? That's separate from the actual business model, which is short-term rental arbitrage.
Right.
So could you dive a little bit more into that side of things in terms of just like, are there other platforms outside of Airbnb that we can look into when it comes to using this business model for our business?
Right. So the Airbnb CEO loves to joke that Airbnb is a verb and a pronoun because people just use that as a like catch-all for short-term rentals. So after I had my harsh lesson in entrepreneurship, I was only on Airbnb in 2010.
Yep.
And then as I started to educate myself, I discovered HomeAway in 2011. Mm-hmm. And then I later on discovered other platforms. And then when I went back to school to educate myself at NYU, they had people come in like to teach who, they taught us how to run hotels, right? I'm probably the only one who had my own business, but they had people to come in. And one person who came in was somebody who ran booking.com. Mm. And now this is 2013. And I'm like, oh, I can put my property on booking.com. So I called the person and I said, hey, can I list my property on your platform? So they said, yeah. At the time, I don't think they realized that like Airbnb, so how do I say this? Airbnb was kind of like in a gray area. So they let me list my property on booking.com. So that's where I realized I can list my properties on multiple platforms. Mm. Later on, I listed my property on Expedia because these people came to present themselves, you know, for us to work for them. But then I was like, I can list my property on these platforms. So by 2013, I was on Expedia, booking.com, VRBO, HomeAway. There was so many other, Roomorama, a lot of them have gone under because Airbnb ate them out.
Right.
So in hospitality, this is called channel distribution management, right? So you have to list your properties on multiple channels. Mm. So let's say you're coming to visit New York. Airbnb is mainly for millennials. Let's say you're a retired person and you're 60. Are you on Airbnb?
Probably not.
So all the people who only have their properties listed on Airbnb are losing money from these this retired person who's coming for 2-3 weeks.
Right.
They're probably on booking.com. So you should list on all these different platforms to attract different types of clients because Airbnb is mainly for millennials. And the other platforms are for, especially like VRBO, they're for groups. And booking.com is for international travelers. So they have different, you know,
different audiences.
Target markets. So a lot of Airbnb hosts don't know that. So they all sit on Airbnb not realizing you're only getting people under 40. The retirees are using VRBO. People on VRBO tend to have more money. Mm-hmm. The international people who come to your market are not on Airbnb. They're on booking.com. So yeah, you should definitely. So I learned this little by little as I went back to school. And as people came to, you know, present them, their for us to work for them, I was like, oh, I could list my property here. So by 2013, I was on multiple platforms. And so, yeah, you should definitely be on multiple platforms.
So that's interesting because I really love that because to your point, it's now you're maximizing opportunity for your calendar always to stay full because you're not just getting in front of people that are on this platform, but on several other platforms.
Right.
Right. To where, once again, it's not to say you won't run into some slow seasons, but the likelihood of it isn't as high. Mm-hmm. But I think that perfectly segues to another question I have because in me speaking with other people in this space, I've heard of the approach to like niche down in terms of who you create your short-term rental arbitrage business for.
Right.
Like I know one young lady, I think she was in South Carolina. She had a short-term rental business where she only took travel nurses because the travel nurses almost were like, they were like tenants because they wouldn't just stay for like a day or two and be out. They'd be there for like weeks at a time because they would have like these contracts, right with these hospitals. Mm-hmm. And she was crushing it, right? Do you talk or teach around that in your program? And if so, what is the approach if we wanted to niche down as well?
Yeah, niching is awesome because now there's like 4 million, it's probably more now, hosts on Airbnb. And so you have to like, you have to beat them by their own game. So travel nursing is amazing. However, I encourage my students to do group travel. Because when learning about, you know, when I went back and learned hospitality, I learned that the hotels make the most money when groups come in.
Right.
So when people are coming in for conventions, for weddings, for all sorts of group travel means 10 or more. So we have our students, those who are brave, get a property so can sleep 10 or more people. But that means you got to pay a higher rent. But I'll give you an example. One of my students has a 5-bedroom in Hollywood, Florida. Mm-hmm. Her rent is a whooping $5,500. Mm. But she brings in $15,000 a year. But you got to be... It's kind of scary. If it's your first property, And you're like, $5,500? Oh, my lot. God, that's a lot. But it was her first property, and last year she made $160,000. Mm. So we tried to focus on the group travel niche, because that's the most lucrative niche in travel. Because how much do you think it costs for 10 people to pay a hotel to stay for 3 nights?
That's a great question. Yeah. And they're all, how many people per room?
That's 2 people, 3 max.
So it's 10, so that means we're doing like three rooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Typical hotel room is like on the low end, 150 to 300. Mm-hmm. So that's 300 times three.
Right.
That's 900 times three again at night. Just $2,700.
Plus hotel tax.
Plus hotel tax. So really, you're looking at like a nice little three racks. Exactly. And then some.
So when you have a home that's for a group, you could charge $1,000 a night. And the people who are coming are more than happy to pay you that $1,000. They're together in a home versus getting 3 hotel rooms and paying like 3x the price. So that's why group travel, I love group travel. The only downside is the rents tend to be higher. But you just focus on, especially now with regulations, you just focus on that one property. You can make a lot of money doing that.
That's gold. That's gold. So what, for you, in your experience in working with other people, what would you say are the most important hires and some of the most important hires and the most important systems that you need in order to grow this business effectively?
Most important hire is your cleaning staff. And very important. When I first started, I was cleaning the toilets myself.
You were cleaning yourself. Well, I mean, you had to do what you had to do. You ain't know no better. Right? You get to it.
So and then one day, this French lady called me, and she was like, "The bathroom is very dirty."
It was a guest who was staying there. Hilarious.
I was so embarrassed. I was like, what am I cleaning toilets?
Right.
So then I started hiring cleaning people. And so nowadays there's an app called Turno. You can connect it to your property management software and it automates everything. Your cleaners can make or break your business. If you have a bad cleaner, you can have the most beautiful property. Your guests are going to give you bad reviews. Bad reviews mean less bookings. Less bookings mean less money. So you definitely need a great cleaner. If you only have one property, honestly, you could run that by yourself, unless you're working a 9-to-5 and it's too much. I encourage my students to just have one for group travel. And you also need like a software called like a property management software, so that you could connect all your different platforms in one central place. But I feel like your cleaner can make or break your business, so that's very important.
So the cleaner is the main one. You said it's something that was it Turno?
Turno.
So that app does what? That program, what does that do?
It helps you find cleaners in your town that are Airbnb trained, because your property has to look kind of like a hotel. I try to stay with white sheets, just like a hotel.
Yeah.
White sheets, white towels, folded nice and neat. Put a cute little triangle in the toilet paper type of stuff. So those cleaners know to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you just get a regular house cleaner, they may not understand that, because if they clean for your house, you don't have triangling toilet paper, right? So a lot of them, some of them are hotel trained, some of them are understand how Airbnb properties should look. You can go on Airbnb, find a super host, find photos, and say, hey, can you make my property look like this? It has to look very hotel friendly type Airbnb type stuff. So that's where you find the cleaners in your town.
Because you talked about the French lady that came in and was kind of complaining about the bathroom. What's the craziest Airbnb story or situation you've had to date?
Oh my God. There are 2 crazy Airbnb stories. Should I tell you about
the drug dealing transvestites? I'll take that one first.
Or the French guy who got arrested for.
I want the drug dealer first. Give me the drug dealer first.
I get a booking on HomeAway. This is not Airbnb. People like to blame Airbnb for bad guests. I get a booking from. I will never forget that. I get a booking on HomeAway for a Facebook executive coming from the West Coast.
Yep.
They booked the place, and I'm thinking they're regular. I'm like, oh, wow, this is a Facebook executive's thing. That's cool. Oh, my God. I think they stole the guy's credit card. I didn't know something was off till the landlord of the property called me, because the landlord gave me the green light to do short-term rentals there. The landlord calls me and says, Martine, there's people dealing drugs inside the property. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said the whole building is up in arms. So I get down there, and turns out they're like people who stole this guy's credit card, booked my place, was dealing drugs in the place.
Really?
After they checked out, they broke back in. It was just crazy. And when I was like, oh my God, these people are fraudsters.
Right.
So that's the crazy wild story.
Hey,
I almost got kicked out of that building because they created so much havoc over 3-day booking. So that was one of my craziest stories.
So we have drug dealers that are pretty much playing the identity theft game.
Right.
And then the other one, what you saw, someone who got arrested.
A French guy.
Okay.
Comes to one of my Upper West Side properties. And, you know, sometimes New York City buildings are hard with the keys.
Yeah, I don't know if
you have that experience.
Yep.
And so he can't open the key, sorry, the door. And for some reason, he feels the need to, like, kick the door or, mm-hmm. like, damage the property. The super on site was kind of annoyed of all these Airbnb hosts coming in and out. So he called the cops on him. So I get a phone call. He's talking to me. I'm arrested. I'm at the precinct. And so, like I said, I run my business very hands-on. So, my guests call me. So I got on the phone with the officer. I said, "Officer, he's a visitor. Can you please let him go? It was a misunderstanding." So they let him go. So those are my two crazy stories.
Yeah, I'm not me. click. Appreciate your time, business, and then that's pretty much it. Like, I'm not, yeah.
Believe it or not, I don't have a lot of crazy Airbnb stories. They have a lot of them on, you know, that go viral, but mm-hmm. for 10 years, very little crazy stories.
Is that more because of how you run your business or more because of the nature of the industry to where you just aren't really going to deal with a lot of those?
I think the reason is in New York City, we mainly had a lot of international tourists and they were well-behaved. So maybe in other markets, there's a lot of domestic travelers who know the laws, who know they can stay and overstay and try to squat. Mm-hmm. But most of our tourists here are coming from Europe and South America, so they have to go back home. Mm-hmm. They're here to visit the city. They love the city, and then they leave. So for the most part, I didn't have a lot of crazy stories.
Kind of diving into that, because you talked about it earlier, like, you know, not all, it seemed, the more I kind of read about it from afar, it seems like slowly but surely, because, you know, you have the hotels and these hotels have like a monopoly within all these cities that they're mm-hmm. in. They see platforms and programs like Airbnb to where it's like, y'all are taking money out of our pocket. Mm-hmm. And I heard something about lobbyists and things like that working to kind of like minimize what's going on with short-term rental so mm-hmm. that the money could stay in the hotels. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of like policy changes and things like that happening. What are some of the different things that we, whether it's from a standpoint of just being compliant, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to get in any negative situations with right. this business.
Right.
We want to make sure we know what we can do, what we can't do, what laws apply to us and what don't.
Right.
What do we need to do to make sure that, you know, we don't run into any issues from a legal standpoint or a compliance standpoint in running our short-term rental business?
Yeah. One of the cities that are totally anti-Airbnb is New York City. Like, they had, from 2011, they've been fighting with Airbnb to make it illegal. They finally won the fight, I think, in 2023, right? So there's no Airbnbs here anymore.
So yours aren't here anymore at all?
No. So there's a wild story. There's a wild side story to that.
Okay. I'm all ears.
So one day in 2021, mm-hmm. COVID, mm-hmm. I'm traveling because it's like nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And all my bookings get canceled anyway because in 2020, like, you know,
everything
the country
shut down.
Got shut down and so forth. I come back from UK and I get like, you know, I don't know if you ever experienced a scary knock on your door.
Yeah.
I open the door and it's like four cops in my hallway. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get arrested. I don't know what I did, but I'm getting arrested today. Mm-hmm. And they came to hand me a letter from the mayor's office telling me they're shutting down my Airbnb business. They hate Airbnb. They shut me down first in 2022, but then they shut down everybody in 2023. And so there's no more Airbnbs allowed here in New York City. So it's done. The only person who does have one is Jude Bernard. Do you know him?
I do know Jude. Shout out to my guy. I got to get him on the podcast. But
what's up, Jude?
But he doesn't have it. He made his is his actually on Airbnb or mm-hmm. or did he? Because I know he bought a hotel and he said he was going to turn it into like a short stay with Jude or something. Like that.
Yeah, stay with Jude.
But is it actually on the app still?
Well, last year it was. He spoke to my mentees because I saw him go viral.
Okay.
And I slid in his DMs. I was like, oh my God, you're the only Airbnb host in New York City. How cool. Mm-hmm. And so from what I understand, he purchases properties that are already licensed, abandoned properties, nobody wants, that are licensed because you need a certain class in New York. Mm-hmm. Most buildings are class B. You need a class A. So Jude is a genius. Like, he purchased class A buildings, so they're already licensed for short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. So nobody's in the city is going to bother him. And then he refurbishes them beautifully, and then he, from what I understand, he's making like $80,000 a month doing this, and he has no competition because everybody's gone, so everybody's shut down.
That's crazy. Yeah. Would you do something like that, or is not really your cup of tea? Not really something you'd want to do.
So because I discovered St. Louis, like the Midwest, I think I'm all into St. Louis now. So
okay,
you
locked in over there.
Yeah, 10 years here, and then got in trouble with the city. So to St. Louis, you could get a property for like $180,000 mm-hmm. and make like $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very attractive to me. And there's no regulations in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
There was supposed to be one, but someone took the city to court, so they just abandoned that. So
yeah. I gotta talk. Drew, that's crazy.
Oh yeah, he spoke to my students. It was amazing.
Interesting.
He's the only Airbnb host in New York City, and he owns his properties because he got them licensed for Class A before he even closes on it. Wow. So once you're Class A, there's not a lot of Class A buildings anyway. Everything is Class B. So in New York, if you're not Class A, you can't do Airbnb. So they found a way to shut everybody down. Yeah, so he found a loophole. That's a loophole.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
That's the same loophole I was talking about for credit sweeps.
Yeah, there you go. He found his way around it. I'm gonna talk to him after. I had no idea, and I know Drew, so this is gonna be good. Okay.
Yeah.
So you found your market in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and like you said, it's about kind of just knowing. We talked about how like New York. Are there any other you're in St. Louis now? Are there any other short term rental friendly states?
Yeah.
Like a Missouri, that we can look into if we're interested in getting in this space.
So everybody thinks St. Louis is ghetto.
Okay.
It's almost always voted the most dangerous city in the country. Mm. Everybody goes to Atlanta, Miami, you know, sexy places. Mm-hmm. But there's a gold mine there because there's a lot of demand mm-hmm. and not a lot of supply, which is a, you know, entrepreneur's dream. Mm. And so there's so many people visiting there. Other markets are Indianapolis, the Ohio's, the whole Midwest, mm-hmm. Milwaukee. So look for a place with a convention center, which St. Louis has. Mm-hmm. It also has one of the top 10 hospitals in the country. Mm. It has, what else it has? It has a lot, it has a few, what do you call it? Like corporate, like Busch Anheuser is headquartered there. And it has a huge baseball following. Mm. So people are coming from all sorts of cities in the Midwest to watch the Cardinals play, and they need a place to sleep. Mm. And so because nobody pays attention to it, even the people who live there don't realize how lucrative it is. So when I did my market research after I got shut down in New York, I was like, I think St. Louis. Mm. People say it's ghetto, but I don't think it's ghetto. So my student who just started, he lives in St. Louis. This month, he's going to make about $10,000. Mm. He saw me on social media in his backyard. He was like, what's this lady from New York doing here? Mm. And so he joined my program, and now he has a property, and he's just the group travel that we talked about. Mm. He has one property that can sleep 10 people. The rent is $2,100, and he's charging $1,000 a night in the Midwest. Mm. And so he told me he's going to get two more like in rental arbitrage. So now this year, I'm going to purchase, like you said. It's a good time to purchase because of all the stuff going on.
So how are you managing? Because you're here in the East Coast. Mm-hmm. St. Louis is in the Midwest. What's the day-to-day look like of managing like Airbnb that isn't in your backyard? What
mm-hmm. does that look question, like? That's a good question, yeah. So you need to have a good staff on the ground.
Right.
Good cleaners. If you could get your cleaning person to also be your inventory person, like pay them a little $20 extra. Say, can you have things Amazon and delivered mm-hmm. and have them restock for you. You can go on apps like TaskRabbit or Handy. Mm-hmm. Those are two apps. You can find Handyman. Mm-hmm. You can also find Handyman on TaskRabbit. And you may have to go through a few shady people. Sometimes there's shady people on there. But I've been able to find good people in St. Louis from those apps mm-hmm. and cleaning person also. And so they do the stocking for me. And then the software is managed, they're automated. So mm-hmm. once you connect the software, everything's automated. So
you talked about how you use AI and like on the credit side. How are you, if at all, are using artificial intelligence in your short-term rental arbitrage business?
Yeah, so after that fiasco in 2011 with dynamic pricing, mm-hmm. I discovered the importance of dynamic pricing, right? But I had to manually price my properties because there was no AI like around 2013, 2014. So I called a rep I had in Expedia mm-hmm. and I was like, I don't know how to, a lot of these people were helpful to me because there was a lot of people doing Airbnb back then. I was like, I don't know how to price my property. She was like, well, I'll give you access to the hotels close by mm-hmm. and you can see what they're charging. So I literally had to manually do this around 2014, 2015. But now we have these apps, like AI apps, like Price Labs was my favorite, Wheelhouse and Beyond. Mm-hmm. So Price Labs is awesome. What it does is it does dynamic pricing. So we're in New York City. Today is Friday.
Today's Friday.
Hottest day for hotels, right? Mm-hmm. So you're using the app, the Price Labs app. It's looking at the market. Mm-hmm. Let's say your place is empty. It's going to see what's being booked in the hotels close by, Airbnb host, and it's going to drop your rate. Let's say it's a busy night. It's going to bring your rate up based on what's going on. Let's say there's an event going on. It's doing all that stuff for you. So it's using, and the people who created used to work for hotels. So they saw a need for that, and they created that specifically for Airbnb hosts. So you connect Price Labs to your Airbnb listing. Mm. You connect it to your central property management software, mm-hmm. and it lists all your properties, like on Booking.com, Airbnb, Expedia, VRBO, have those rates. And the AI is genius. So I have a lot of Airbnb hosts who try to create their own rates. Like I used to do in 2013. I'm like, you're not an AI. Why don't you use the tool? The only tricky thing is you need a revenue manager to set it up for you. Someone who understands how hotels work.
Right.
Because, you know, it's a little, it looks simple, but you need to, there's a few little tips, you know, that you need to understand. So if you find a revenue manager, we have somebody inside our team who does that for our students. Mm-hmm. But that's the AI we use. We use Price Labs, and it's amazing. It's a game changer.
So what's interesting is, you know, like you say, you're nearly two decades in this space, and you're at a point now where you're coaching a lot of people who mm-hmm. want to get to where you're at and beyond, right? With a lot of the business owners that you coach that are either in the space and just not having the amount of success they want, mm-hmm. or they want to get into the space and having a difficult time starting, what are some of the common reasons that you see why people who are interested in the short-term rental arbitrage space aren't winning? Why they aren't having as much success as they would like to have?
Okay, awesome. So I'm going to use a student as an example. Mm-hmm. And this is common for everyone, so it's not just her. So when someone comes to me and they say, I have this property, I'm not making money, so I diagnose. It's one of the three reasons. Mm-hmm. They're not on enough platforms, they're only on Airbnb, which is where everybody's congregating, and they're not attracting the other types of travelers we talked about earlier. They're not, most of the time, 99% of the time, they're not using Price Labs. That's a huge issue. Or their market just is not, you know, right for Airbnb. So my student with the 5-bedroom, she came to me in 2023. She said, Martine, I have this property. My mentor helped me find it. It's a beautiful property. It seats 15 people. It's not making any money. And I'm like, So I started to diagnose to find out if she's in the right market. I said, the first thing I do you have hotels close to you? She's like, yeah, I'm close to the Hard Rock Cafe. I'm like, oh, sorry, the Hard Rock Hotel. I'm like, the Hard Rock Hotel has thousands of rooms. You have one property. So that's weird. So I said, are you using your Price Labs tool? She goes, yeah, my mentor set up the Price Labs for me. So I said, are you on other platforms? I think she was only on Airbnb. So as it was a phone call. It was a sales call. It was like a freak phone call. So as we start to diagnose, it's one of those three things. I said, Mel, I suspect your Price Labs is not set up properly. And then I felt bad because she had already paid a mentor. Mm-hmm. The mentor got her beautiful property. It was already licensed. Only thing is something was broken, like something in her business was broken. I said, tell you what, pay me for the mentorship if you don't make back your money. In 30 days, I can make your money. So we set up her AI properly, and that's what was broken. Her mm-hmm. AI was not fixed. The following month, she got $10,000 in booking. Then she started making $14,000 in booking. Just that one thing. Either your market, which that wasn't her issue, your Price Labs, that was her issue, or she wasn't on all platforms. Mm. And so once we fixed that thing, she went on to make the 160, and then she bought her own property this year that she built in St. Pete's. Mm. That she built her, I think it's on the market for $659,000. So she took the Airbnb money that was an arbitrage property. She didn't own that. And then she got a hard money loan plus business credit. Yep. And she built her own property outside of, the central part of Hollywood. And now she's selling that property. So just fixing that one pricing issue is going to change your business.
One little small little turn of the knob.
Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
She charges so what happens is she's not far from the cruise port. Mm-hmm. People come in and they stay the night before and the night after the cruise, and they need a place to stay. Groups, like 15 people. Right. They're charging her $1,000. They're paying her $1,000, $1,200, $1,400. And she was using Price Labs, so obviously her pricing was broken. And so just like that, we fixed her thing.
Is there a dark side to this? Is there a side of this business that doesn't make it to social media to where it's just like, yeah, you know, this part is great, this part is great, but this is the one thing about running this business. And you're laughing already, so I feel like there might be.
Dark side on the whole side on the whole side? Or the guest side?
on the whole side, because that's the,
right,
we're the host. Yeah.
Are there dark side on the whole side?
Is there just any, because I mean, in business, nothing is linear, right? Like not everything is not going to be, I don't care what you do, whether you're, you know, short-term rental arbitrage or you sell, you know, ice cream or whatever it may be. Is there, what does that now look like on the air in the short-term rental business?
Yeah, so red flags, locals. If you are on Airbnb, why is a local booking your place?
Yeah.
To cheat on their wives?
Hey, yo. Wait a minute. Wait, it's a family show. Wait. Go ahead.
So let me tell you a story. This did not happen to me, but it was in the New York Post. This man booked this lady's place in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
Again, she was focusing on group travel because it said she charges $1,000 a night. Mm-hmm. And he said to her, can I bring in X amount of people? And she said, sure. A lot of Airbnb hosts love to monitor their guests. I don't do that because I think it's kind of strange, kind of creepy. Anyway, she's monitoring. The host is monitoring him. Obviously, she owns the home. Maybe I don't monitor them because I don't own the home. So it's her home that she owns. So she's monitoring this guy and he's bringing more people than he said he would. So when he leaves, she says, hey, you need to pay me for the people that you brought in because that's not what we agreed upon.
Right.
So he says, I'm sorry, I'm not paying you. Mm. So then she tries to get the money from him. So he writes her a bad review in retaliation. She goes back to the camera, sees that he brought a side chick in there, and calls the wife. And sends the wife the footage. And now the guy is suing Airbnb and the host of violation of privacy. So I don't like locals. They're always up to no good. Like if somebody lives in your town, they have no business. And if they're renting,
I'm not. I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
And if they're renting your place, you have to ask. A lot of times in the past, when they would be renting my place, they would tell me, I'm coming to visit my mother-in-law. That's why I'm staying at your place. They usually explain themselves. But if they book your place, they live in your town, you say, hey, thanks for booking my place. They don't answer. They ghost you. You never hear from them. That's because they don't want to have a communication with you because they know they're going to do something bad. Diddy parties, cheating on their wives. It's always something. It's always a red flag. Throwing parties, just doing terrible things, trashing your place, even squatting. So locals are the dark side of Airbnb. They're always up to no good.
Josh, can you put the camera on? Is that me? This is me? You see what happens when you don't have God in your life? You find yourself in situations like this. Stay faithful to your woman, man. Stop playing.
That's funny.
Attention business owners. Are you tired of getting denied for business credit because your personal credit is still holding you back? You have the business, you have the vision, but every single time that you apply, lenders hit you with the same brick wall time after time again, your credit report. You see, here at Takeoff Financial, we use advanced consumer law strategies to get every negative item removed from your credit report. Things like collections, charge-offs, late payments, delinquent student loans, and so much more. And best of all, it's fully done for you. Our team sends out the dispute letters, files the complaints, and handles everything needed to get your credit to the finish line. Which means you don't have to lift a finger, and we'll do all the heavy lifting needed to put you in position to finally get approved for business credit. So if you're ready to stop getting denied and start getting funded, head over to takeofffinancial.com to book a free consultation with me and my team to see how we can put you in position to get one step closer to your funding goals.
Yeah.
Wow. Damn. Dealing with locals is the Yeah.
Yeah, I had bad experience with local in St. Louis last year.
What happened?
The same exact thing I just said.
Like, so pretty much that same. So this is a repeated
worse
thing.
Worse than that.
Okay.
They booked the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family.
Yeah.
Families are green flags.
Yeah.
So they have reviews, but whenever you mess with someone and they don't answer you, I didn't notice they were locals, first of all. So you gotta go on Airbnb and see that they have a local number, the 314 number. So I didn't notice that. And so they booked the place and I'm like, thanks for booking my place. Let me know when you check in. They never tell me that they checked in. It's just strange. Usually people check in, they say, hey, we checked in, we had a great time, we're enjoying your place. They just totally didn't message me. And then they message me finally and say, hey, can we extend? And I'm still not seeing anything wrong with them. I'm like, oh, it's a family. They want to extend and stay longer. So I say, sure. So they extend. Oh my God. Then because I'm not in St. Louis, I befriended the neighbor next door.
Yeah.
She's like the neighborhood watchdog.
Yeah.
Her name is Gloria. She's so funny. She messages me a photo. She said, Martine, there's a bullet hole in your window. And that's when I said, oh, what? They also stole half the house, put a bullet hole in the window. I give them the worst review. All I could do is give them a bad review. And that, so like locals are always bad news. There's never anything good about them.
Yeah, I'm very happy I have a podcast, bro. I wasn't cut for nothing else. You put a bullet hole in my house. I'm gonna return the favor. It's not going in the house. It's going somewhere. All right. So moral of the story: if we get into business and somebody in the area books your thing, automatic.
So now Airbnb is allowing. So the thing is, once they book your place in the past, you'll be stuck with them. But now Airbnb is, so that's why I give them a bad review, because Airbnb is allowing you to cancel people if you feel uncomfortable without penalizing you. Mm. In the past, they would give you a review saying you canceled, you would pay a penalty, and you may possibly lose your superhost status. Mm. But now this person, if they book another person's place and they look at the reviews and it says, this person put a bullet hole in my place and stole half my place, they could call Airbnb and say, hey, I don't feel comfortable renting this person to this person, and you could cancel. But yeah.
Quick question about that. I'm surprised because I actually just booked the Airbnb the other day. The superhost thing, you have, because I've seen people get the superhost title and they have like 100 reviews and stuff. And then I've also seen people get the superhost title and they don't have like 4 or 5 different like reviews. How do you, is that something that, I feel like it's something you could just buy. I felt like, I'm not in the space. Is that something you could just buy or you actually have to earn that?
Oh no, you have to earn it.
So how is it that I'm seeing some people that have like 3 or 4 like, you know, different people that they've let in their house and boom, super hosts. But then I'm seeing other people like yourself that have been doing it for years and they're also super hosts as well. How does that work?
Those people probably have multiple listings.
There you go.
So if you click on their profile, you'll see all the listings they have. So if I go out right now and I get a brand new listing,
you're immediately a super host.
Even with no reviews for that property, I'm already a super host. So that's what it is. They have multiple listings.
So that also gives you the upper hand
to get any more bookings
as well, because even if you get a new spot, the second, naturally people want to gravitate towards super host because like, oh, this person's good.
Yeah.
That's gold. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, yeah, wow. So. Okay. So at this point now where you are, you know, once again, nearly 2 decades in the space, you've done a lot and you're helping a lot of other people have success in the space as well. What is the big picture end goal for you? What's the North Star that you're chasing at this current moment in time?
So now in the next 10 years, I would like to, actually the next 7 years, I would like to purchase property and own my own property and either do short-term rentals or midterm rentals. Remember we talked about the travel nurses? Those are great. Like for example, St. Louis has one of the top hospitals, right? So if I get a property there, doctors and nurses and patients will stay there. Mm-hmm. Those are safe guests. You make less money in midterm rentals, but it's also less work. But it's still more money than if I were to rent it on the market. Mm. And then they could also stay longer. So I would like to purchase at least 10 properties in the next 7 years that I own in the Midwest. It doesn't necessarily have to be St. Louis, but since I've already studied that market, I'm going to start there and coach. So no more arbitrage because of what Airbnb's doing. Plus I have so much experience I want to own now. Arbitraging is great. It's like training wheels, but eventually it's great for you to own it because now you have the best of both worlds. You have a business and you also have a property that you own.
Beautiful.
So that's what I like to do.
I love that. Well, this was definitely a very fruitful conversation. I'm happy I got the chance to sit down with you.
Me
learned
too.
A lot. I'm a little nervous.
Why are you nervous?
About this, what's going on in Airbnb. Y'all got to get Jesus, man. Stop playing. Separate conversation. But I think this is very great. And like I said, I think I've only ever talked about this business model one other time on the channel. I think I learned a lot. So I know my audience learned a lot. And thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me here. Sure. I love your podcast.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I know we got to get you out of here. Before we do, I know you also have a lot going on.
Oh yes.
Let the people know, of course, where they could find you and also how they can get connected with you as well.
They could find me on all platforms. I have YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, on at Martine LaCroix, MartineLaCroix.
Awesome.
And I also have masterclasses weekly where I help people, you know, sweep their credit using the loophole so that they can get started.
Mm. Awesome. Beautiful. Yeah. Martine, thank you so much
thank
for coming on
so
the show.
Thank you so much, Marvin. It was 100%. Amazing.
But most importantly, thank each and every single one of you guys. And if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second, take a minute, take an hour out of your day right here, right now to go ahead. Hit the like button, show this episode some love, tell a friend to come back, rewatch it again. As always, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Marvin Francois. That's the loveliness from Martine LaCroix. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you all and God bless.
Thank you so much.